open the March 5th meeting of the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee. Today is Juniper Day in our committee, among other things. And Mr. Roper, we have several bills. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bills 2808, 2997, and 2998. Can you give us a brief overview of these three bills, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2808 requires Business Oregon to work with OSU Extension to support investments in Western Juniper harvesting and manufacturing, authorizes the state forester to contract for juniper harvest on state-owned forest lands, and appropriates funds. House Bill 2997 appropriates funds to Business Oregon to assist businesses engaged in Western juniper harvesting and manufacturing and promote public-private liaison efforts. And House Bill 2998 requires Business Oregon to establish programs to provide assistance and workforce training for Western juniper harvesting or manufacturing. It establishes a program to identify and map high-quality stands of Western juniper. It establishes the Western Juniper Industry Fund and requires the State Department of Ag to regulate juniper harvesting and exempt it from the Oregon Forest Practices Act. However, there is a dash one amendment on OLIS for this bill.
Very good. Thank you. A lot of folks have been waiting for these bills, and so we'll kick it off here straight away. Claire Clark, Tom Wolf, and Bill Cluding, please. Good morning and welcome to each of you. I recognize that you may not have been planning to come up as a panel. So toss a coin quickly or however and decide who goes first.
I can go. Chair Witt and members of the committee, I'm Claire Clock, a farmer from Corbett, Oregon in the Columbia Gorge. I fought full-time and part-time for the last 35 years. I hold Oregon Department of Agriculture certifications as a private pesticide applicator and consultant. I have used restricted chemicals on my farming operations as needed. My wife and I own 27 acres, mostly farmland. I've been employed as a conservation specialist with Soil and Water Conservation Districts and have served as director of one of our local districts. And I have extensive experience with natural resources education with both adults and children. I listened with intent the expert and public testimony that we had last week and on the bills 2808, 2997, and 2998. I'm familiar with the massive undertaking that the juniper control, due to my familiarity with the Soil and Water Conservation District and the Natural Resources Conservation Service and what they've been doing already. I support the bill for all the reasons that was listed in the last hearing. We all know that there's a lot of juniper that needs to go. However, I'd like you to consider an act on a couple of points. What happens when the marketing is successful, and it's going to be successful, what happens when one shift a day turns to two shifts and three shifts, and then the product availability dries up because our goal is to get rid of the stuff? And then where do we go then? And the reason I think that I'm concerned about this is that I'm familiar with what happened to the residents, the former residents of Kinzua and Valsetts when the timber industry cut everything off and left. And so that is the one thing. As an experienced farmer and a conservation specialist tells me that agriculture riparian areas are not protected as well as they should be. So Department of Ag is in this bill. Department of Agriculture is in the process of addressing this problem that in the last few years. And also the Department of Forestry is in the process of increasing riparian protection on state and private lands due to both public demand and federal mandates. I agree that state and federal land needs to be included. However, there is a need to that specific areas of the old growth juniper that we learned about in the last hearing, that there needs to be those types of areas that need to be marked and located. I can't imagine a 1,000-year-old tree. And when you need some protection about that, we all know that there are people who would cut the last tree, fish the last fish, and commandeer the last drop of water for a dollar. So please earmark some of these reserves to for that type of habitat, or it'll go the way of our large old-growth conifer forest. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Good morning, Tom.
Morning. Morning, Chair Witt, committee members. For the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, representing our 3,000, depending on what story I tell at each committee, because it could be 3,000, it could be 2,700, depending on how truthful I want to be, members of TU in Oregon. So anyway, I'm here today in two realms. One, as a conservationist who wants to protect the habitat of Eastern Oregon, and especially juniper, which is part of that habitat, but someone else who's, as a native Oregonian, whose family's been here for over 160 years, concerned about two things in Eastern Oregon: the massive proliferation of juniper across Eastern Oregon. It's really gone crazy. And second, the lack of jobs in Eastern Oregon. And I have great concerns about both of them, because as many of you know, and after this session, maybe this could have happened as early as this summer, I plan to retire to the Wallowa County. So, and I was born in Eastern Oregon. So I'm very concerned. I think that some of these bills, especially 2998 and 2997, have great principles about establishing jobs using juniper as a product, and I think that's a great idea. I think that we should definitely explore that. We should use, instead of bulldozing down juniper or burning it, as seems to be the use right now, we should look at ways that we can use that product. But I'm also a conservationist, and I want to make sure that even though there is too much juniper, that we don't overdo it. So I ask that the concerns addressed by Jim Myron, Amy Stewart, and others be addressed in amendments and looked at, and that whatever plan we work with ODFW and other agencies to make sure there's an adequate plan that will protect the ecosystem and not, you know, as Clara said, cut down the very last piece of juniper, but manage it in a way that will be a benefit to deer, to sage grouse, to other species, that the proliferation of the juniper has harmed their habitat. So we need to be wise. We need to be careful. And above all, so we support 2997, 2998 with amendments. We don't support 2808, but we ask that you work with ODFW. But we think both these bills have great potential for my state, my region, and the ecosystem out there that I love so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that comment. And for those 3,000 members of Oregon Trout who haven't got their dues in just as yet, you heard your lobbyist send the money in right away. Good morning, Bill.
Morning, Chair Witt. Committee, for the record, Bill Clothing Carpenters Industrial Council. We finally have a bill. You notice every day I carry my jobs pen, every day. And we finally have a bill that's going to create some jobs, especially where the jobs are needed the worst. One job in Eastern Oregon is almost 100 jobs in Portland. We've got to look at that fact. Rural Oregon really needs the jobs. 2808, 2997, and 2998 are going to get us there. It won't be a large number of jobs, but it's going to put people to work. We got uses for this type of juniper, and on top of that, it's going to restore the land the way it should have been and could have been. For an example, OPB, just here a while back, had a real good half hour. They showed a little canyon over in the eastern Oregon that at one time had a stream that had red band trout in it. And we know how serious our red band trout supply is. All of a sudden, with the juniper, kept encroaching, encroaching, and finally it dried that stream clear up. Dried it up. And they went in there and they moved the juniper back to where it was originally. And then when I say removed, that's what they did. Within 3 years, they was able to go, the state and conservation groups was able to go back in there, and that stream reappeared. And they planted the red band trout. So again, we have red band trout in a stream that disappeared. And our hard work did it. These bills will do that. We can put people to work. There's uses for this material. I urge this committee to sit down with the Department of Energy, especially with Betsy. It's going to take money to do this, money. But we got to let Betsy know, the Department of Energy, that there's a right way to create jobs. And I don't want to touch on the scandal they're going through right now, but it's a big scandal. But this will put people to work. This will help Eastern Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for this panel, Representative Esquivel, followed by Vice Chair McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I envision right now we have 10 million acres approximately with juniper on it. Back in the latter 1880s, I believe we had information in this committee that there was about a million acres. And it was mostly ridgetops and certain select areas, but we've let this thing, we kind of let it out of the box is what we've done. We've done nothing about it, and so consequently it's knocking down about what I think it was about 1.5 million? 150,000 acres a year, that's what it is. It's knocking down that. Every year, they're gaining 150,000 acres. So what my thought on this whole thing is that, first of all, there's some very nice products. I believe that Vice Chair McLean received some molding made out of that stuff, just absolutely beautiful molding. But if we get to the point where we can start gaining on this, then we could start taking it back to its originality, and I'm sure we must have something in our archives that shows us, maps it out, of where the juniper was in the 1880s. And if we can get back to that and keep it in check, then I think we've done our job.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McLean.
Well, I just wanted to tell the panel I feel really good about the fact that all of you, I think, came up here with a really balanced message, and that is that we want the jobs in Eastern Oregon, we want jobs in Oregon, but we want to make sure we're doing it right. And I just don't consider us still exactly the Wild West, and I feel like we've got best practices, and we've got, you know, the Forest Practice Act, and we have ways of doing things in a way that we do try to help the environment and protect the environment. And so I would just ask this one question. You all are agreeing that it's better for us to use the wood rather than burn the wood.
Okay. Yes, that's the whole goal. These boards, they don't rot. You can put them in a planter, mm-hmm. and your grandkids can use that same planter. It's a very durable wood. And my recollection of burning, we burn way too much biomass now. We don't have the uses for it. That's my other project. I'm working on biomass. But we can find uses for this, even if we make pellets out of it. Canada, the South, they're making pellets out of their woody biomass and selling it to foreign nations. They're making big money while we just allow ours to set. No, we can't burn it, Representative McLean. We can't burn it.
Okay.
If I might add real quickly, and I'll be very brief, Chair Witt, Representative Vice Chair McLean, and these words are not spoken very often, but I agree with Bill.
I'm glad we're taking this, Mr. Chair.
Well, very, very good. Very good.
And a short comment, Chair Witt and Representative McLean. Again, the protection go back to the original range, and one of the reasons that Juniper has taken over is because we overgrazed our grazing lands and things like that. The other jobs that will be helped with this particular bill will be the cattle industry and also the livestock industry, because we will be making more palatable forage for both deer and for cattle industry. So we have to look at those type of things before. But the point made by Representative Esquivel that was well taken about reestablishing an original range and then taking care of our range like we should have, like we do now, not what we did 100 years ago. Okay. Thank you.
Very, very good. Thank you. Vice Chair Krieger.
I appreciate the discussions we've had, and the committee, is unique and that we really want and solicit broad range of opinions, sometimes might be even different than our own, but we want to learn. I can remember back, and it's not that long ago, 72, and I got involved in forestry, but prior to that time, 50s through the 60s, we eradicated alder in any way we could. We slashed it, we cut it, we sprayed it, we stomped on it, we ground it up with a cat. Anything we could do, that was the way we did it. And you planted fir. And we didn't look at site-specific pieces of ground where alder was going to be the best crop, and we had no idea. Just a few years ago, there were a big load of quality alder. It was the same as a load of fir in my country. So I think we need to, like you say, there's maybe areas that it has gotten away from, the juniper. But at the same time, we need to be eradicating disease, not species.
Sugar-free.
Thank you. And Mr. Clark, I just want you to know that you have my support, that we won't be cutting any 1,000-year-old junipers as well. And I might even chain myself to the tree. So,
What? Wait a minute. Who said that?
Is that a promise, Mr. Chair?
I want
a
picture. Things on record today that are stunning.
Yeah.
We want video.
Right. But
we have a bill in the judiciary that will probably put you in jail.
Thank you.
But I want to assure you, sir, that the intent here will be to the harvesting that juniper that has encroached on other lands where it has not traditionally been part of the ecosystem, and try and get it all back into balance, much as I think your testimony and your whole panel's testimony was balanced. I think that's exactly where we want to go. And I know Tom mentioned Jim Myron, and I have personally asked Jim to make sure that nothing here gets out of hand, that we don't go overboard, and that we protect the ecosystem and protect juniper where it is rightfully a part of that ecosystem. So I very, very much appreciate your caution as well as your balance. Gentlemen, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
And Bill, we'll see you on Woody Biomass later this afternoon.
Right, sir.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on any of the...
You have Senator.
Senator.
Oh, Senator. I'm sorry. I thought you were here on the following bill.
I am on the other one, too.
All right. Excuse me. I apologize.
No problem.
I made an assumption that...
I got in late.
Okay.
These juniper bills. I am one of the lead co-sponsors.
So, for the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5. The timber industry has been a really important part of my life and my family's life on the West Coast for over 100 years. And so when I think about that, and I think about juniper. I think you've probably already heard this, but we used to have about 500,000 acres of juniper. Now we have about 5 million acres of juniper. There is a discrepancy there, and a large part of that was due to fire and the fact that the little ones burned up most of the time in the past, and we controlled fire, and all of a sudden juniper said it would be great to go everywhere, and it has. And my concern is it sucks out the water table, and if you look at the water table in certain parts of eastern Oregon, it has continued to diminish because the little bit of water that gets there doesn't have a chance to get down. It gets respirated by these trees. And we need to make a concerted effort to start having, returning that environment to the environment it was, for the wildlife that it's there, for the people that are there, and for that water table that's there. Juniper needs to be reduced. And the fact that we can actually use it for something, and it really is beautiful wood. I'm sure most of you have seen it. It is a beautiful piece of wood. We need to figure out a way, and I think these bills start that process, to help the Western Juniper Alliance continue their work across that very vast area of eastern Oregon. And I look forward to the time when juniper is one of those prized woods that people have a little piece of it, a pen or a whatever, and they can say, you know, this came from eastern Oregon, from these junipers that were not 100 years old. The 100-year-old trees, for the most part, are going to be in the places where they're supposed to be, and that's because that's when we've really had this rapid increase. But I really don't like seeing two bulldozers with a chain between them running around the road, taking all the juniper out, and then a big fire afterwards. That's not the best way to use this natural resource we have. So I think the bills start that. We have a lot of work to do, though. 4,500,000 acres is a lot of wood. So we need to get on this, and we need to get after it, and we need to start doing things. The fact that it is a long-lived wood, a lot like myrtle and some other things that we have on the coast, we can cut it all down and set it someplace, and it'll still be there to work on later. So let's get it off the floor of the of our state and in places that can use it in the future. So I would encourage you to support these bills. Thank you very much.
Thank
Any
you
questions
very much.
I'd be glad to answer.
Questions for our colleague, Representative Esposito.
Questions for you, Senator. I just wanted to say that it's interesting. You have 5 million acres. We had testimony of 10 million acres. So
it's in there
is
somewhere.
Is it in there somewhere
it's
between or
it's
what?
It's a lot of acres. Eastern Oregon is so vast. I mean, truthfully, where there are not people and where there are trees, it's going to be interesting when we start figuring out what's really there. How much is there. And we've had, you know, the thing that's been nice about this is it was good to see environmental interests as well as industry interests all kind of having the same feeling about this. And it has been some of the environmental groups that have gone out there trying to work hardest to get some of that stuff cleaned out, which I appreciate. They just haven't had a market for it. Oregon State University will get engaged because they will start helping develop markets and developing products. And I think that is another one of those things where we have this ability to bring everybody together around a common goal to make Oregon a better place and use that wonderful natural resource that we have.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony, and you'll be here for Representative McEwen, please.
I think you were touching on where I was headed.
On our research hatchery. Hopefully soon. I have a meeting in a few minutes, but I will stay around for a little while.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yep.
Anyone else in the public to testify on Juniper this morning? Mr. Myron, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. I'm Jim Myron, representing Native Fish Society. Since you mentioned my name, I thought I'd better come up here and say something.
Defend yourself.
I do want to put Native Fish Society on the record as in support of 2998 with the -1 amendments. We think it should be sent to the Ways and Means Committee to see if the wizards down the hallway can figure out how to pay for it. But that's where we are and what we support. And I did make this document available to you. This is probably the best science available on juniper, its management, its biology. It's from the folks at the OSU, not the Extension Service, but the Ag Resource.
Excellent.
Folks, the scientists down there. And so take a look at any questions about the science. One other question I just wanted to pose. You know, we're spending millions of dollars removing juniper. We're spending billions of dollars fighting fires. Perhaps there are some fires in juniper country that we could allow to burn and remove that juniper for free. Something to think about.
So, definitely something to think about. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Anyone else from the public? Mr. Roper, can you tell us very briefly, just so that folks have an idea of what the Dash 1 amendment entails?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Simply put, the Dash 1 amendment for House Bill 2998 deletes the provisions that would require the Department of Agriculture to develop a program to regulate juniper harvesting, and also delete those provisions that would exempt juniper harvesting from the Oregon Forest Practices Act.
Thank you very much. And so, folks, the intent here is we have several bills. I had wanted to winnow all of them down to one bill. I'm told that there is a constitutional problem because one of them is a involves is it revenue expenditures?
Yeah.
Okay, it's an expenditure bill, and is going to necessitate a separate bill. I want to get all of the public policy, if possible, into one bill. Any of you who are interested, and Mr. Roper has a list started already of folks who have expressed an interest, anyone else who has an interest and would like to make sure that we get that public policy bill as close to perfection as we can, please see Mr. Roper, and he'll be happy to get you signed up with that. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bills 2808, 2997, and 2998. Thank you all, everyone, very much. And thank you to the public who's willing to help us get us to one bill, or a couple, I guess. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3012.
Go down there, huh?
We'll wait for, yes, please, if you would. Call Vice Chair Krieger, Senator Roblin, and is there anyone else, any other of our colleagues that want to join you?
Bill.
Okay. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Yep.
Thank you, Committee and Chair Witt. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, District 1, South Coast. House Bill 3012 is the funding mechanism to provide research dollars for the LC Research Center. I believe it was, everybody thinks back just a little bit, last session, I believe the bill was 3441 passed unanimously in the House and with only one no vote in the Senate, and that was Representative Senator Boquist, who voted no on every bill that day because they made him work on Saturday. So basically, it was unanimous. And that was the whole concept of redoing the LC Research Center board, giving them direction, giving the board authority. And at that time, there were quite a few of us, Senator Roblin, definitely one, and I gave our assurance that we would find new revenue sources to fund the research projects at the center. And that's what this bill does. I had tried to figure out, well, what is it we need? How could we generate the dollars? Well, it comes up with a surcharge on the sport licenses, anywhere from 50 cents to a dollar and a half, and then 3 cents a pound additional on these both commercial gillnet and salmon trolling the ocean. I haven't seen the exact revenue impact, but at the first glance, he had some people do that for me. It looks like about $1.2 million a biennium, which it lines out real good if you look at the projects that they've got forecast for the future. I think the board has come together very well. It's working good. It has addressed the research projects and the main question regarding hatchery versus wild salmon, and that being what hatchery management practices and physical conditions are causing hatchery fish to be less productive than wild fish. The members of that board chose their own chair and vice chair. We ended up with Cam Perry from Coos Bay as chair. Vice chairs were Scott Starkey from the Coos Bay area, and Lindsey Ball from way over on the east side. I think most of you know them. And if you're going to have a discussion about A and B personalities, they definitely would fall into one group. They feel strongly about things, argue their points, and are insistent on doing what they feel is the right. And I think in this case, when this board came together, started working with Oregon State and the scientists there, I look forward to them making great progress. And I'm really starting to understand and like the projects that they've developed. I think in just closing, I want to say that if we want to protect wild fish, we need to learn how to produce hatchery fish that are compatible with wild fish and reduce risk. I'll leave it there if you have any questions.
Thank you very much.
For the record, Senator Arne Roblin, House District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into the valley and Fall City and Sheridan. And so the Alsea hatchery is kind of in the middle of that whole area. When we first started having conversations about developing a new form of hatchery, a research hatchery at LC, we were really excited on the coast. I think a lot of people were excited to know that we can develop the next generation of hatchery kinds of research. Our problem was we really didn't put into the bill a funding source for that hatchery, and so our assumption was that there would be enough grants and other kinds of money that would come into the research hatchery through Oregon State University and the scientists that were assigned there to produce the breadth of knowledge that we wanted and we were looking for. When Representative Krieger explained what we're looking at, trying to figure out how do we make these new research fish compatible and just as strong as a native fish, that was one of the things we'd hoped to happen. But that wasn't the research money that came in. So we ended up with a research hatchery doing lots of different research on a lot of different things, helping a lot of students at Oregon State University, but really not meeting the purpose of what we had set up the hatchery for in the first place. So we made a commitment after the changes that were made last year that we would try to come up with a funding source to fund that research which Oregon wants. Not they can continue to do the other research. There will be grants given. There will be students that will come into work there. But we needed to say we have this hatchery. We need to answer some questions for ourselves. And with that comes the responsibility of having money put there. I think we looked at a lot of different sources. And what we wanted was a consistent source that is not dependent on us coming to the legislature every year to ask for funds. And I give a lot of credit to Wayne for having talked to the different people who are directly benefit from the kind of research that will be going on and coming up with a plan that actually doesn't cost that much. And I think we can defend what we're spending it on with respect to this with the people who are paying that little extra money. And all the information I've got is the people who have seen it are agreeing to this as long as it is spent appropriately in the deal. If you look at the three people who you mentioned who are the chair and vice chair, they are type A people. They do believe in having a plan and following the plan. And if you have an opportunity to go to the hatchery and ask people, and I wish everybody would go see it, you will see that they have a very detailed flowchart of how the research would go about and all the way down to the final product, finding out what we can find out at the end of that line. I think the scientists are really excited about that at the Alsea hatchery as well. But my confidence in the board, my confidence in the plan that we now have for the hatchery, and my confidence that the people who are asking to help fund it are all aligned with the opportunity to get information we've never had before based on good, sound research. So I encourage your support of this bill.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. And I want to thank you for your years and years and years of effort and advocacy trying to get hatchery research on track. I think we're almost there. We just got to get you the money. And your efforts have paid off, and we're going to see what we can do to try and help you out with that. Thank you so much for all of those years of effort. Committee members, Representative Whitson.
Thank you. And I think it's a really worthwhile cause that you're asking for this. I was wondering if you know if ODF&W will be asking for increases in fees in the angling licenses this biennium again like they did last time.
My guess is that they will.
Yeah.
And Do you remember? I can't remember what they were last time. They seem substantial to me, but I just can't remember if it was like 20% or something increase.
I don't recall, Mr. Chair, exactly when those dollars, 2006 or someplace back in there. If you look from that time to now, just regular inflation, gas, insurance, all of those fixed costs have also increased, wages, everything. So our main problem, in my opinion, this is a separate subject, but the decline in hunters and anglers and opportunity have caused some problems, and we've got to, hopefully the new director and the board commission can address that in some way.
Could I follow up? It just seems to me that ODF&W should be helping with this, because this does ultimately turn around and help them with the money that they bring in. So my comment is not that I don't think this is a great idea, and what it's going for is one of the most important things we have. I just would like to see a little extra help from them. Thanks.
And I would say that, you know, they are going to have a hard time in front of the Ways and Means and others to justify what they need to run their organization. And so there are a couple of projects which they have encouraged at different times. But when it comes to the governor's budget and keeping it within that, they are not reaching out for other things. And I think that put an onus on those of us who made a commitment that we're going to get some money assigned. You'll notice that we introduced a bill also on the salmon license plate to make sure the money actually that's collected goes to the right thing. We want to make sure that it's clear that there's going to be some money in these agencies that is clearly going to go to this project alone. And I think that was the onus was on us to kind of show people here's a way, here's what we're expecting, and we have a lot of support for this outside of what agency has. They will eventually be collecting it and doing it, but we took on the responsibility. They have their budget they have to deal with. We're saying over and above that, we have a commitment, so that's why we're here. But I thank you for the question.
One other point that might be of value in Section 7 of the bill, it requires the commission to, Department of Fish and Wildlife, to report quarterly to the board for the incomes and outgoes that are in there, and then annually to this committee. So there's some accountability, where are they at, how are the funds doing, what projects are moving forward, and then I would assume on their annual report, any new science that comes in, that's going to be a benefit that we can actually utilize in producing the type of fish we want and reconfigurating our hatchery system. I'm looking forward to that.
We all are. And Representative Whitsett, thank you for making a very important point, and I suspect that it's been heard, not only from you, but a number of others as well. So thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we've nailed this down pretty solid on accountability, because if we don't, it won't be there. I mean, that's a fact, and that's a proven track record. As for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, I believe that they raised, 6 years ago, they raised their fees, and I want to say someone within that organization told me it was a 40% increase, but I find that hard to believe. This one's a 26% increase. Okay, so if 40, that's a large increase for 6 years. It outstrips inflation. But see, what I can't get through to people is Ohio has done an extensive study on this, and the more they raise the price of the cost, the less people they have. If they drop the cost, they get more people to participate, and they've proven that over and over. So I have some real serious concerns about raising fees at this point.
So thank you very much, Representative Esquivel, committee members, of course, as you know, we have a work group going on that's taking a look at what we can do to make improvements at ODF&W. We had so many participants in our last meeting that we had to avoid a quorum. That's a good, a very good sign that people are eager to participate. And we will not lose sight of the points that have been made here this morning, and I think that there are going to be some good ideas that are brought forward. Any additional questions or comments for our colleagues?
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. And, Senator, I hope we didn't get you delayed here too long.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to call up, please, Lindsey Ball and Jim Myron.
Motor voter.
Again, good morning. Lindsey, it's been a long time since we've had you before us. Great to see you, and looking forward to your testimony. Gentlemen, you decide among yourselves who goes first.
Well, I want to hear what he has to say.
All right.
Well, I don't have your wisdom. Chair Whip, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I hail now from Pendleton, Oregon, and which is not a bad place to live, let me tell you. Also, I'll remind you from that, though, if anyone wants to go to the research center, I come free of charge. I don't charge per diem, travel, and I have to sit down and visit with anyone about it. It is truly the only one in the world, and the way it's designed and set up. So it's special if you haven't been there to see it. I'm also the vice chair of the Hatcher Research Center board, and I just want to touch on that a little bit. It was kind of a beleaguered group before last session, and with a little bit of scrutiny from the agencies and the legislature, it kind of got rejuvenated. We've got a good working administration on the board. Unfortunately, Chair Perry is ill and was not able to travel. In fact, the doctor told him, he told the doctor yesterday, well, he says, I think I'm going to go. The doctor says, you either go home and go to bed, or I'm going to put you in the hospital. So there you are. And otherwise, he wouldn't have been here. I guarantee it. Anyway, it works well together. After about four meetings with the board, we started working as a team. People were talking with each other back and forth, sending emails. We had a few overnight meetings with different groups so we could manage ourselves even better than what we first attempted. Everyone knows each other real well, and I appreciate working with the group. It's good.
Representative McLean.
McEwen, thank you.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
McEwen.
It's the MCs. Chairwood, thank you. I wanted to add, Dr. Ball, that Scott Starkey was hoping to be here today also, who is, I believe, also on your board, and he was called to the federal courthouse in Eugene to testify on another matter. The feds trumped us today with his presence, but he had really planned on being here to testify also. So,
yeah,
he wanted me to apologize on his behalf that he's not here to help you out today.
Chair Witt, Representative McEwen, I talked to Scott, and he explained the same thing to me.
Yeah.
Right now he's just buried, but that happens in your personal life, and
yes.
So that's why we got backup.
It's great to be retired, too, right?
Well, you're busier than when you work.
Well, I'm doing fine. As proposed, it's been mentioned earlier that the funding that would be generated from this bill is about $1.2 million per biennium. One of the reasons that we look towards this is because we have people who would like to donate money to us. But they want to see money on the table. They would like to match it at times, but if we don't have any money to put on the table, then we lose the money of a potential donation. And so this budget request is going to be advantageous for us to pick up more donations. I know it's going to happen. And lots of times your grants are written in the same way. A grant will be shared with other monies in the agency to move the Hatchery Research Center forward. It's also other fund money. The money that we've requested in the bill is not general fund money. It's other fund money generated by poundage fees or ad valorem tax on fish, as well as the license fee increase of anglers in Oregon. I want to tell you a little story about an experiment And I think you can see from that, this story, how it can tie, this money can tie into it. It's a geomagnetic field experiment that we did at the Hatchery Research Center. And for years, we always suspicioned that the geomagnetic field of the Earth caused fish to navigate. Because once they go to the ocean, they're there. But how do they know where to go, and how do they know how to come back? And so we simulated in a tank by wrapping it with electric current around the side of the tank, which creates a magnetic field. We mirrored in that tank the exact geomagnetic field that exists in the Bering Sea, which is the furthest our salmon go in migrating out in the ocean. Now, what we found was, once we got them to the Bering Sea in the tank for that geomagnetic field, we turned it to the Bering Sea, and all those fish, in about 2-3 minutes, all turned and were pointed south. So then we flipped that. We said, okay, we'll mimic the magnetic field for Hawaii. Turn it on for Hawaii, and all those little buggers turned north. And so we were able to prove that the magnetic field of the Earth is one of the tools that the fish uses to navigate. And we also know they use scent to come back to their natal streams. We've known that. But once you get out in the big pond out in the Pacific Ocean, that scent's kind of like gone. But that's how they do it. Now, it raises a lot of other questions for us. And this is where additional funding can help us. One of our biggest problems with our hatchery fish is that when they leave, there's only about 1% that come back. We don't know why. But what we do know is that in our hatcheries we have today, in all the raceways, we've got rebar, we've got pipe that's metal, we've got electric current that runs through and underneath that raceway. And if you take your meter over and put it up against the hatchery raceway, it's hot. It creates its own magnetic field. And so do we, by raising them as little fish, little fry on up, are we disrupting their natural homing sense of homing and how they navigate the globe? Give you another good example. We barge fish on the Columbia River. We bring them down through four of the largest hydro dams, hydroelectric dams in the United States. We have them in a barge of steel. On that barge, we have generators to generate electricity. We have pumps to pump water, pushed by a steel tug. And we have some of our lowest return rates on barged fish in the Columbia. Fish to come back home. Another question we have to answer. The third question that I think is a real puzzler for us too is we use coated wire tags. And it's a little magnetic piece of metal about that long. And we put that in the fish's snout. That's where it sits. And it sits right next to the sensing unit of the fish that tells him where to go in the ocean. We need to answer those questions. and from that, we need some of the dollars to accomplish that.
Representative Fred.
Well, we now know what to do with the juniper. You know? Just make the barges out of wood. And we'll
there we go.
There it is.
There it is.
But I hope the committee appreciates our yearning to take that next step. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to us. It's for the fishery as well as an industry. And it can help a lot of us, I think, with whole kinds of other natural resource kind of issues. Birds use geomagnetic forces too in fields to navigate the Earth.
Representative Whitsitt.
I don't really have a question, but as a geologist, there's a belief right now that we're in the beginnings of a geomagnetic flip of the Earth. right now. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. They can occur in as little as 200 years to 1,000 years to complete the reverse. So it'll be very interesting. And I wonder sometimes if we aren't experiencing some natural variations right now also that the fish are experiencing.
Well, Chair, representing Whitsitt, what I would offer as a thought of hope, the fish have been here for several millions of years, and they've probably been through these flips before. Yep. Somehow or another, they've been able to survive it. Mm-hmm. And sure I suspect that the same thing would happen when this occurs. That concludes my testimony. I'll take any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you very much. Before we open it up to general questions, I think we'll hear from Jim.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Jim Meyer, and representing Native Fish Society. 2 years ago, we came in front of this body and supported House Bill 3441, which created the changes to the Hatchery Research Center that Lindsay talked about. And we're here today to also support this bill, 3012. There's also a dash one amendment to this bill. I think makes it a little bit better. What I would suggest is that, and for the record, our organization also supports the angling fee increase that is being proposed by the department and is now in the governor's record. This potential fee in this bill as adding to what the department is already asking for, and we support that. So I'll close at that.
Thank you.
Have questions?
Thank you very much. Any further questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you. Yes, please, Lindsay.
Chair, one other thought I wanted to mention. I got a phone call 3 weeks ago from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They're overhauling a hatchery, a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service hatchery up at Wenatchee. They saw the results of our geomagnetic study, and they are now asking themselves, maybe we need to change the plans about how we build our hatchery. Mm-hmm. And so the research that we've done has caught the attention of a lot of people. And the first month that it was up on the web, we had over 100,000 hits from people around the world wanting to know about the results. So it's caught a lot of attention.
Representative McEwen.
Chair Witt, thank you. I don't want to take a lot of time on this, but Lindsay, I know that you have had a lot of folks in your Hatchery Research Center who come on their own dime to use your facility to do their own independent research, and some of it's international. Is that correct?
Chair Witt, Representative McEwen, that is correct.
You might want to just take a second and explain. I know it's been a source of revenue for you, and our goal is to, we love it when people come and pay their way, but that takes up kind of bandwidth in your facility for us when we want to do research that impacts us here in Oregon. But I know there's been some very interesting projects that have come from the international scene that have come to your facility.
Well, the list is long.
Yeah.
But quickly, Dr. Noakes, he's the fellow that runs the place, and schedules all the research projects and such. A very intelligent individual. He called me one day, and I told David, this had been 10 years ago when I left ODFW, I wanted to make that an international destination for scientists, because we can learn a lot from other people. And he called me back one day, it was about a year after that, and he says, hey, I thought about you today. And I says, what's going on, David? He says, I have five scientists here at the hatchery from five different countries. And he says, doing work here. And what they do is they come to the facility because, as I said, there's not another one like it in the world. It can answer unique questions that we have for our fishery resources. And so they come and pay us to use the facility and do their work there. And then they share their work with us. So we get it, too. And it's a win-win for everyone. And That's an ongoing event all the time.
Please.
I just wanted to note that it's one of those instances where we have a facility that's known throughout the world, but not very well known in Oregon. And it's ours. It belongs to us. And I think it's important at times to recognize the great work that's being done, that people outside of Oregon recognize, that we may not recognize, that we have this gem right here on the Alsea River that is a very important research facility. So thank you for indulging me.
And thank you for noting that. Representative Barreto.
Yeah, Chair Witt, thank you. Lindsay, how long has this geomagnetic theory, you know, been known or been experimented with, I guess?
Chair Witt, Representative Barreto, it's been suspicioned for many years. To me, and everything that I know about, it's the first time we were actually able to mimic the geomagnetic field in a tank so we could watch the behavior of the fish. And they also went over to the physics folks in OSU to come and help build, you know, wrap the wires where they're supposed to be wrapped and all that sort of stuff. And so we get a little double bang for our buck just because of that, it being at the university. But I don't know of anybody who has done that. I think we led the way on that one.
So follow up. Yes. So if a hatchery up in Washington gets wind of this and starts rethinking how they're doing things, in the experimental realm of this, you know, would they, like, you know, Representative Frederick made a joke about using juniper, but would they, you know, make a hatchery out of another material and then just experiment with that? I mean, it takes 3 years for these fish to come back, but just say, hey, let's go ahead and throw this out and see what happens. I mean,
Chair Witt, Representative Barreto, what their thought was, they would abandon the steel and cement raceways, and that they would put in all fiberglass tanks, and then they would bring, you know, plastic pipe rather than metal pipe and things like that into the facility. That's what they were starting to look at. Okay. But there's other things too that we have to consider: the closeness of a building. Mm-hmm. That could be doing something like that as well, because buildings are filled with it, as you well know. So there's more to know than what we know today. But we can get there. And if I have U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that's really interested, maybe they might want to partner with us on some of the research. I mean, it kind of catches once you get it started.
Yeah.
And because we all want to know. When you get so few return fish, and then you have questions about other issues associated between hatchery fish and wild fish, we've got our plate full. We've got a lot of work to do.
I can't help but think what all those banks of turbine generators on the Columbia River do as the fish pass through. That must be a little bit of magnetic interference there somewhere. So,
well, I don't know if you've ever been in a powerhouse of one of those dams. I've been in several of them. If you walk on the powerhouse floor, like at the Dalles Dam, you feel that 60-cycle hum in your chest.
Yeah.
And there's no electricity going through you, but let me tell you, that vibrates you.
Yep. Yes, indeed. Anything further? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Invite us back anytime.
Thank you very much. You're invited anytime you're back in the neighborhood, too.
Well, I might stop by and say hi.
Great. Thank you very much. Next, please, Tom Wolfe, Bill Cluding, and Joe Rollator.
Chair Witt, Commission members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolfe, again, the Executive Director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, and I'll be precise this time representing the 2,700 members of Trout Unlimited here in the state of Oregon, and I won't exaggerate. But again, I'm here to testify in support of this bill and in agreement, again, in that rarity with my colleague Bill at the end of the table. Now, I'm different than many people that support this bill. I don't really know if you can ever make a hatchery fish as good as a wild fish. I'm not totally sure on that. I don't know if that can really be done. But I believe that we should at least take effort to look at that and see what we can do, because hatcheries are always going to be here. They're always going to be here, you know. And my group never advises that we get rid of hatcheries. They're always going to be a part of the landmark. They're always going to be part of the system. So we need to have a research center that looks at how do we make hatcheries more better. How do we improve, for want of a better term, and I hate to use this term about wild creatures, but product that comes out of those hatcheries. So how do we do that? So we supported the bill in 2013 that reformed the hatchery. We support this bill because we believe it's a good bill, a bill that provides funding to do the needed research. And we just think this is something that needs looked at. And even though, you know, of course, I'm a wild fish group, We think that the research being done there is cutting edge, is a benefit not only to hatchery fish, to wild fish, but to wild fish. So we think this is a great program and great funding. And a quick aside, you know, getting back to the Trout and Limit also supports the license fee increase and would support any surcharge added onto that. Because one of the problems we're facing, and I heard representatives talking about changing, you know, putting new surfaces in hatcheries. Well, that takes money. One of the things we really need to look at is how do we fund the agency? And Chair Witt is to be commended for forming a task force that one of the things we're looking at is funding, because the thing that we're going to have to face is if we want to make hatcheries more efficient, if we want to change things, that takes money to do so. So we need to be looking at ways to fund those hatcheries along with money to make the hatchery research more efficient and better able to carry forth the product that it needs to come through, needs to produce. So those are just my thoughts, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Chair Witt, committee for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters, and in behalf of anybody that likes to fish in this state. Chair Witt, committee, we do need the funding. If we want to back up and take a look what's happened last spring, NOAA, in their wisdom, decided that we was not doing a good enough job with the coho salmon in our coastal streams. So they said, we're not going to give you the $4 million this year that we have been giving you in the past. And that happened. In the previous governor's budget, the funding for, I think, a dozen coastal Oregon Fish and Wildlife people was cut. These are the 12 people that help on these coastal streams, figuring out what they can do to restore the habitat, working with the conservation groups. There's another $2.4 million. I'm working on that problem. I'll be testifying in Ways and Means Subcommittee and National Resources on this same issue. We want to go take another step back. 2 years ago, public record, the Northwest has spent $13 billion on restoring fish, especially the ones that go to the ocean and back. $13 billion. That was 2 years ago. At the same time, public record said we'll be spending $1 billion a year. And I guarantee you, Brad, committee, chair, we are spending that much. We have to keep trying to restore these fish. These federal agencies, they're not playing fair with Oregon. Over a decade ago, I brought testimony into this building that the Caspian tern and the double-crested cormorant was massacring our fish. The emphasis got put on the Columbia River, but Chair Witt, committee, I can guarantee you it's in every bay. And on top of that, we have the seals and sea lions. It's been stated by federal folks that, yeah, they know that over 45% of our spring Chinook and the Columbia River never make it to the first dam. And there's not one fisherman touches them. It's not just the Columbia River. Again, it's in every bay that we have in this state. I can show you in the small rivers, and I fish a lot of them, there'll be 100 seals and sea lions laying side by side on these sandy beaches. They've wiped out the cutthroat trout, sea-run cutthroat trout. I didn't think anything could catch a sea-run cutthroat trout, but that's the seal's favorite food. Again, this is a good bill. Somehow we have to come up with funding. Hopefully we can get these jobs restored back in our coastal streams. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I live in Lincoln County, about 25 miles downstream from this hatchery. We built this hatchery 10 years ago to be a state-of-the-art research facility. We built it with a combination of money, including lottery money and other funds, fee money, and some participation from other agencies and other institutions. The hatchery is operated by ODF&W, and the operation is paid for by ODF&W with other funds. In other words, license fees pay the little over $1 million per biennium to operate this hatchery. But as Lindsey Ball said earlier, when we all decided this was a good idea, we didn't allocate dedicated funding to the hatchery so the hatchery could match or pay for the kind of research that the board wanted to do. So this bill is about that funding. This bill is a proposal to give the committee discretion over $1.2 million per biennia of money that can be allocated just by that research board that we created last full session with 3441, House Bill 3441. And they then have come up, that board has come up with a research plan, and I've posted on all this and I've handed out to the audience the OHRC research plan. And I've also handed out several pages of drawings, charts, and these are from Vice Chair Scott Starkey. And when I got these, I looked at them and went, wow, that's really complicated. But when I looked at the charts and read the research proposal together, it finally clicked on me. There are three proposals that are three kinds of research that are going to be done at the hatchery, proposed to be done at the hatchery, over a period of 10 to 15 years. And these charts show you where they start and the decision points, and then based on those decision points, where then the next rest of the matrix goes. And this proposal additionally uses other hatcheries in the system. The Elk River Hatchery, which is on Elk River just south of Representative Krieger's house, has an issue with the fish not completely going back to the hatchery. It's a run-of-the-river hatchery. The fish just swim past it. And that's a problem because the fish then go up and interfere with the natural spawning of the Chinooks there from there. So, but when we built that hatchery, which is actually the last hatchery, production hatchery we built in the Oregon system, we built a really nice laboratory there for testing. So the Elk River will become an auxiliary facility for OHRC, both as a production facility, as a recapture facility for the fish that are released under this research proposal, and also to do the lab work. So I would hope that you would take the time to look through this proposal and realize that it may not be the ultimate funding for this this hatchery and this proposal, but I think Representative Krieger and Senator
Roblin.
I'm sorry about that. Senator Roblin have come up with a good proposal, and that I hope you will support this with a due pass recommendation and send it down to Ways and Means for their consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for this panel?
Got one.
Yes, please, Vice Chair Krieger.
Over the last 4 years, some conflicts had gone on with the department in Oregon State, and I think that there's come in a healing. And I think everybody would agree that we are focused on the most important thing about that, and that is getting the funding for the research center. And Joe, and I refer to him as my favorite Democrat when he comes in the morning with his coffee. He gives me the Democratic look.
Yeah.
And
twice in as many sessions.
Yeah.
And he, I just want everyone to know, he has put in a lot of volunteer time, hundreds of hours of running amendments back and forth, talking to our chair, talking to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And sometimes people who volunteer their time aren't recognized enough. You need to understand there are people out there that, if you can get a fishing reel out of his hand, which is difficult, then he's getting to concentrate on this. He could be a great asset.
Well, thank you very much. Gentlemen, as always, appreciate your support for those things that that truly matter. Thank you very much. I understand that there are some folks, or at least a person from ODF&W, who would like to possibly testify.
Sick or something.
Yeah. You should ask that other Dan, the guy with the blue shirt.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Brett Brownscombe, acting interim deputy director with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And thanks for the brief opportunity to testify. And,
absolutely.
I wanted to also just let the committee know, to my right is Bruce McIntosh. Bruce is the deputy fish administrator, fish division administrator for us. Bruce is also the one who is overseeing the the work of the department with the Hatchery Research Center and the board. So he's fairly familiar with what's been happening at the board. What I wanted to start with is just some broad perspective. This bill that Representative Krieger and Representative Witt and Senator Roblin have brought forward does something good for Oregon, and not just Oregon, but as testimony is from Lindsey Ball and others has evidenced in all those who care about fish, especially the icons in our culture related to salmon and steelhead. ESA recovery and loss of opportunities over time in fishing communities, both commercial and sport, struggles of wild fish populations, those are part of the recent history of Oregon that we are all trying to move beyond and get to a better place. And I think what happened in 2013 with the passage of the Hatchery Research Center Board Bill led by President Krieger, it really did a good thing in that some of these battles between hatchery fish and wild fish are legendary. And having this board in place gives a venue and a table for people to come to, bring their arguments, bring their differences to a common table and have a discussion about this issue around hatchery and wild fish in a science-based context. And it really has been a positive. And for years, ODFMW, Oregon State University, and the Hatcher Research Center Board have been and continue to seek funding to implement the research priorities as developed by the OHRC board. House Bill 3012 does that. It establishes a long-term funding stream critical for this type of research, and this is research that typically takes 2 to 3 generations, fish generations, to complete in an empirically sound way. So taking this action in this bill, in concert with the research plan that's been developed by the OHRC board, has set Oregon on a path to resolve many of the longstanding issues around the hatchery wild fish debate in the interactions between our salmon, our steelhead, whether they're hatchery and wild, and the publics that surround them. So the board's research plan currently details 3 research projects that the board believes are critical to addressing this hatchery question. The current estimate for the cost of these projects is around $600,000 to $900,000 annually, and it will take 16 years or those 2 to 3 generations of fish and the fish life cycle to complete the research. So having this long-term funding source represented by House Bill 3012 will go a long way towards implementing this research. It will also go a long way towards leveraging a lot of other funds from federal and other sources. So all this is to say we are, as an agency, ODFMW supports the bill and would like to work with the lead sponsors as well as other bill proponents on some additional thoughts in shaping the legislation as it moves forward. Some of those just out of the gate are considering not limiting funds or the expenditure of funds to OHRC or the Hatcher Research Center only, that there are others with expertise in the field where having some flexibility on who's doing research could help. Second would be on the time certainty around expenditures. The bill creates 2 separate funds distinct from the general fund within ODFMW, and as drafted annually, there would be funds that, if not appropriated or expended in a given or allocated in a given year, would shift to the other fund. One thing to consider is that having flexibility in managing research that takes oftentimes 16 years to complete is real important. And so if there's a way to allow the board and the center flexibility in determining its needs on an annual basis, not necessarily having funds go to from one account into another, but let the board sort it out, report to the legislature as crafted in the bill annually on expenditures and on obligated funds, that would provide a little more flexibility for the board to work on research. Third is priorities for expended funds, and I think the bill or what we've seen on potential amendments would help address this, but there are ongoing and emerging research needs here that as determined by the OHRC board, that are costly, and that's not the only research that needs to happen. Those 3 projects I mentioned are 3 out of the gate, but there's a lot of other research needs that are out there. And so prioritizing the funding for research as the first priority we feel would be wise, and second priority, implementing hatchery reforms based on research findings, hatchery retrofits, issues that we talked about or that were part of testimony earlier. Some of these things that the research is bearing out as potential needs around hatchery management, having that as the second tier priority after the research for use of unexpended funds, and then thirdly, deferred maintenance. So with that, I'll close, and all of this is obviously with the surcharge proposed and the ad valorem fee, and in particular the surcharge on angling licenses. This obviously gets into the larger issue of fees collected by the agency, and Representative Whitsitt alluded to this and others. We would like to have the ongoing conversation with members of the legislative body and stakeholders about how to make this approach and the good things that would be done through this bill additive to what the department has proposed in its fee bill, Senate Bill 249. If we get into the trade-off game, the department's already proposed an approach to balancing its budget that relies on roughly solving a budget gap through one-third staff reductions and program cuts, one-third general fund ask, and one-third the agency's proposed fee bill. So to the extent there are trade-offs, that means the agency will be put in a position of either having to find more general fund or make further staff reductions. And so this is all part of the larger conversation, but to be clear, we believe there are some very good things that this bill would help to advance and are supportive of the bill. So thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Bruce, did you have anything to add?
Just here to answer questions.
Very good. Thank you. We recognize, Brett, that you know, there are some big challenges ahead in terms of your budget, and we want to do everything that we can do to help. You're going to be working with a good man on this bill, and as our vice chair, I know that Representative Krieger will let us know when this bill is ready to move forward. So thank you very, very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Chair Witt.
Anyone else from the public who would like to testify today on House Bill 3012? Please come forward. Good morning, sir.
I may have signed the wrong list.
That's quite all right.
My name is James F. Wright. I am the executive director of Salmon for Oregon Association. I'd like to speak in some big terms for a minute. But before I start, I mentioned 6 weeks ago I was at the HRC when Dr. Ali from Pakistan took a tour, and I was able to join him on that tour. The word is definitely getting out, and I'm speaking as an organization, as an individual, in support of this bill. back in the 60s, many of there are several models around the world for fisheries, the Alaska model, Norwegian model, the Chilean model. Many of these have their genesis in Oregon. Some of the bad hatchery practices that go on in Norway and the really bad stuff that goes on in Chile really kind of has its genesis in Newport and in Coos Bay 50 years ago. With the passage of the Multi-Species Conservation Plan and the new Oregon model that's working its way out to the world, I see that and the HRC and the work it's doing is working hand in hand to sort of fix it. And as the word gets out, the Oregon model will work its way out and fix some of these other systems over the decades around the world, and we'll have a better fishery. 80% I just asked Bruce McIntosh this just now, 80% of fish caught in Oregon are hatchery fish. It's a big number. So we've got to get it right. And I'm personal friends with Chairman Perry, and we've had many conversations on this. And I believe the HRC, the board that is now constituted, and their goals are worthy of funding. Permanent funding, because it's going to get it right for Oregon, and it's going to get it right for the rest of the world eventually, because Oregon always leads in 50-year cycles. So we're fixing what we wrecked 50 years ago, but I believe it's a worthy goal to fund permanently the board, the HRC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for Mr. Wright? Mr. Wright, I love it. I love hearing about the Oregon model. So
yes,
thank
absolutely.
You very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
That. Last and final call for testimony on House Bill 3012. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3012. Thank you all very much. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3013. And Mr. Gallagher, briefly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
House Bill 3013 allows the establishment of wildlife food plots on small tract forest land subject to reforestation requirements without affecting small tract forest land assessment.
Thank you very much. And before our vice chair proceeds, committee members, we have this bill and several work sessions I'd like to try and get through. We need to get some of the bills out of this committee if possible so that we can get them to the floor. With that, Representative Krieger, welcome back again. Good morning.
Good morning, committee, Mr. Chair. For the record, Wayne Krieger, State Rep, District 1. I'll go through this fairly fast and let you ask any questions you might have.
Okay.
The bill simply provides for the establishment of food plan as it is now in Oregon. If you log 10 acres, you got to plant 10 acres. We want to be able to take a small percentage, which is in the bill, and convert it for wildlife habitat. And I think that that is a good thing to do. The American Tree Farm System, which I'm a member of, whenever you go to get your you update your certification to be a certified wood producer, wants to know, what have you done to enhance wildlife habitat? Have you done food plots, which in Oregon you really couldn't? Have you built ponds? Have you done anything at all to enhance wildlife? Well, I'm not able to do that. Legally, anyway, I'm not able to do that. So this simply makes us be able to do that. And most of these landowners that are going to take advantage of this are the ones that are probably very carefully and intensely manage their forest land. There's some checks and balances in it, and they have to tell the amendment calls for them to have to, when you make your application for your to the state forester for your operation, to notify him that you intend to do that. And if you're going to move it across the landscape over time, which the amendment allows, it also tells you that you have to notify the state forester. So I think it's a good bill. It's good for wildlife, and it gives an opportunity for landowners not to be locked into something so solid that they can't provide habitat.
Very good. Very simple and straightforward. Committee members, questions for our colleague? I'm seeing none. Thank you very much, Vice Chair Krieger. I'd like to, is there anyone else, Chuck, signed up? Oh, here we go. I'd like to call up now, please, Roger Beyer and Tom Wolf and Stan Steele.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association on House Bill 3013. Appreciate Representative Krieger introducing the bill and being willing to work with me and some others on some amendments to the bill. The bill as drafted, and Representative Krieger, I don't recall getting into this at all, so I'll just give you a little bit from what my observation was. The bill as drafted would only allow for a very small number of forest land owners to access this new option, in as it refers to the small tract forest land people. And the small tract forest land people is a very small group of landowners who have elected, they own between 10 and 5,000 acres in the state of Oregon, and they have elected to go into a certain tax program, whereas they pay a severance tax on the harvest of their timber. Most of the rest of forest landowners in Oregon have not elected to go into that program, and they pay an annual ad valorem tax on their property, and therefore, and do not pay severance tax. So as drafted, this bill, a small group of landowners who have made that election. When that was pointed out to Representative Krieger, he agreed to expand this to anyone who owns forest land between 10 and 5,000 acres. That will take in that the entire group of landowners who are commonly known as the small woodland owners in the state of Oregon. So we appreciated very much Representative Krieger being able to accommodate that, and that is consistent in the Dash 1 amendments that you, I think, you before you. The other issues or the other concerns, potential concerns that were raised by my group that Representative Krieger agreed to deal with was twofold, and he addressed both of those. One being that
some sort of notification or some sort of not approval, because we don't seek approval to log on our lands, but we have to notify the Department of Forestry when we intend to do a harvest. So we requested that some sort of a notification be at the same time. So the person certainly just couldn't log 10 acres, as Representative Krieger said, and then choose not to reforest it and therefore call it a wildlife plot. Yeah. So we asked, and he accommodated us with the Dash 2 amendments to say that a notification would have to be given both at the time of establishing a food plot. And the other thing we asked for was that be able to move the food plot around on different pieces of the property or different areas on the same property. Because as I would envision it, a landowner would log a parcel, maybe it's 10 acres, and maybe they would say they want to leave 1 acre as a food plot of that 10 acres. And that would be that way for 4 or 5 years. As the surrounding trees start to overgrow that food plot, it's naturally going to start dying off, because clover and other high forage items that big game like don't survive well in a shady environment. So as that begins to die off, the landowner with this amendment will be able to notify the Department of Forestry that they want to move that food plot or convert it to forest land, plant that 1 acre of timber back to timber, and then if they're doing another harvest in another location on the property, they can move that food plot to another area on the same property. We think that flexibility is needed. Otherwise, these food plots are going to become overgrown and not be good for anything but a forest opening. So we thank the sponsor of the bill for working with us, and with the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments, Oswald supports the bill.
Thank you very, very much. Another example of the folks that grow the forests in the state know how to get things done. Thank you very much. Who's next? Tom.
Chair Witt, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, representing the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. Winston Churchill once said, short words are the best words, and short speeches are the best speeches. And the Gettysburg Address only took 2 minutes, so my comments will be very brief. Trout Unlimited supports this bill. We think it's an innovative bill that shows out-of-the-box thinking, and we commend Representative Krieger for putting this forth. We support the amendments that were raised in talking with other groups. So we think move forward and move onward with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, committee members, my name is Stan Steele. I live a little bit south of Corvallis. And yesterday I was on a tractor for 8 hours working on a food plot. And I probably should have been here. There were some interesting topics, but we have to get some work done. It's going to be an early spring. I've been working on food plots for over 12 years on a rehab project with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, ODFW, and we provided the land. And this bill does something that we understand is sorely needed in Oregon: early successional habitat, rotational food plot habitat. Everything from birds, butterflies, to moles are going to benefit from this bill. The flexibility that Roger talked about, being able to move it around a landscape when adjacent trees grow, the overstory grows up to the point it shades out, is an important component. Right now on our national forest, in the Cascades and the coast, we've had nearly a 90% reduction in logging, which means all of our opening-dependent species have had to have either relocation or just population declines. Just a few minutes ago, we were talking about how fish need to be managed to where they can actually help our economy and provide income, ODFW's budget. And the same thing goes on with big game. Earlier, I heard we were talking about Ohio, for example. It was mentioned in earlier testimony. Ohio has 650,000 deer. I don't think Ohio's Department of Fish and Wildlife, or DNR, is in the same financial difficulties that we're having. So food plot bills, something that can do have a positive impact on our wildlife populations and our wildlife viewing to hunting, are good activities. This is a good bill. in my opinion, from the Oregon Outdoor Council, we think it needs to be expanded. And at one time it was called the Oregon Green Forage Program. And it's been cut and cut and cut in ODFW's budget. Work was done with the U.S. Forest Service on the Upper Five Rivers Basin, coastal basin, where we actually increased the productivity of our Roosevelt cow elk significantly and reduced the timber damage because we were actually doing food plot planting in Forest Service units, clear-cut units, and fertilizing. We increased productivity and decreased damage. So these are good. This is a good bill. It's, I think, kind of a reboot of a mentality that we have to look at. And with that said, I might have went over my 2 minutes. That's what we were chuckling about was this note. But I want to thank you. This is good work. So we appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Not seeing any. Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much for your support of natural resources in this state. Next, Al Elkins and Joe Rowleader, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank
for
you.
For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I mean this in the nicest way. We, a number of years ago, we had a discussion with Representative Krieger about this idea. And we took the idea back to the board, and they got real excited about this concept. And as the board changed, the idea and membership changed, the idea still created a lot of support, and it still does to this day. And we especially are grateful for him for bringing this idea forward. And we spend a lot of time, money, and volunteer hours on habitat projects on public land and even on some on private timberlands. And one of our members summed up this bill the other day, and he said, creating more wildlife habitat is a good thing. So I think that's where we are in relation to this bill, and I believe that it's a good bill, it should pass, and we thank Representative Krieger for bringing it forward.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Joe Rowleader. I live in Lincoln County near Walport. I'm one of the people that is in that really small set that this bill was originally designed for. And I signed up here today to explain the amendments to you and the need for them. Former Senator Roger Beyer explained that adequately.
Yes.
So I'd just like to say that I've tried this. It works. It kept the animals out of my reprod. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you for your support. Committee members? Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify this morning on House Bill 3013? Yes, sir. Please come forward. Welcome back, Mr. Clark.
Yes, sir.
Please introduce yourself for the record again.
This is Claire Clock from Corbett, Oregon. And I didn't expect to talk at all on this subject, but that's one of the things about sitting in these meetings. We learn a lot of really neat things, and I think this is appropriate that I make a comment on this on habitat. And I would support this bill. Not just from what is being said in this morning. One of my skills is wildlife habitat design for small acreages and urban areas. I've been doing that for about 25 years now. And one of the things that we have is we have a very tree-centric society on an urban basis, and they just think planting trees is the best thing. And what people don't realize is that we need those food plots in the center of these forests, and I have to relate a experience. A lady calls me out to her place, and she has a small acreage in the 20-acre type of category, and she has this 2-acre field. It's surrounded totally by forest, and she says, well, what can I plant in there? And I'm going, well, don't plant anything because that is good elk and deer habitat, and for small animals, for forage, for rodents, for hawks and raptors and things like that. So that's an education type of thing. Now, from a personal angle, because of my farm, I have established plots in the forest, small plots in my forest, so that it'll draw elk and deer out of my blueberry field, which they can cause substantial damage in one night. They can just, you know, take a, you know, 500 pounds at a time, big eaters, and then also our personal garden. So with that, I would support anything that that has this kind of exception for small forest owners. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything for Mr. Clark? Mr. Clark, do you have a do you have a company? Is there a company name, or is it just you?
Actually, I'm semi-retired. I have Clock Farm. That's a farm that I've operated for 35 years, U-Pick operation and that type of thing. And then I also work for conservation districts.
Very good, sir. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Those of you on television, that's Clock Farms if you need a food plot. Anyone else from the public on 3013 this morning? Not seeing anyone. Representative Krieger, before I close, I just want to say this committee's had a good day this morning, and much of that's due to the bills that you brought forward. Thank you for the, for that.
There's a co-chair. I mean, there's a co-sponsor on there, some guy named Witt.
Well. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3013. Okay, let's see. That brings us to work sessions.
Yeah. I believe it.
Mr. Chair, before we get in work sessions.
Yes.
You know, listening to this and listening to it and for the lengthy period of time that we have over a session, it's become very obvious that we need to have some sort of a vehicle where everyone in the state of Oregon helps support their wildlife. That burden shouldn't fall on the people that fish, the people that hunt, and the people that trap. It should fall on everyone, because we get people that come out of the urban areas and go into the rural areas, and they want to see the wildlife, but yet they don't want to pay. And what I mean by that is I've had people object because they charged them a parking fee to go birdwatch. So we need to have some sort of a vehicle, and we should kind of think about that.
I absolutely agree, and I think that the work group is that's something that they're considering as well too. Point very well taken. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2446. And Mr. Gallagher, if you can remind us about this bill, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2446 would delete the prohibition against advertising by unregulated producers engaged in small-scale, on-premises sale of raw milk directly to consumers.
Thank you very much. And committee members, you may remember we had testimony that we got a little constitutional problem here running in this state, and we need to get that fixed. Folks, prepared to move forward with this bill?
Did you and I discuss, Mr. Chair, did we discuss the fact that we're talking about three dairy cows up on the top of it and two dairy cows producing cows on the bottom of this bill?
We...
But I mean, if you can own three...
I know, but it's like...
That's pretty hard to monitor.
That's part of it.
Do we have a...
Only if you can't count past three.
Well, then you have a problem, because you've got a lot more than that.
Do we have a...
All right.
But it says two, no more than... Two producing dairy cows, nine producing sheep, and nine producing goats are located on the premises where the milk is produced, and yet up on top, it says does not apply to a person not more
And then three dairy cows. Okay, so you can't have more than three.
Yeah,
I see now.
I think they're okay.
I missed a knot.
Yeah.
I think they're okay.
But yeah, I think it's
thank
fine.
You for making sure we've got this one straightened out here, Representative Esquivel. I appreciate that. Representative McEwen, please.
I apologize. I was ill the day that you actually heard this bill, so uh-huh. I didn't hear the entire conversation. Was there a conversation about through this advertising notification that there is some risk involved in consuming unpasteurized milk? Did that become a part of this conversation?
It really didn't, Representative, and I didn't allow that. We touched on it. We did touch on it,
yeah.
But I didn't allow us to get into that topic because the bill really addresses fairness in advertising, that we were disallowing the advertisement of an otherwise legal product in this state, mm-hmm. and it was a constitutional basis upon which this bill was brought forward. So touched on it, but no real depth.
Okay, thank you.
Additional discussion on this? I'm not seeing any. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger, please.
Chair, would I move House Bill 2446 to the floor with the due pass recommendation?
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 2446 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, hearing none, would the clerk then please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative Trevor.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Whitsett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McClain.
Yes.
Chair Witz.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And committee members, I'm going to assign myself to carry this bill. I have personal, some considerable problems with the product, and yet I feel very strongly about the constitutional issue at stake here, and I think it would be good for my soul to defend something that I don't necessarily agree with, but if it's constitutional, I want to defend it. So,
Mr. Chair,
Chair,
we will arrange many questions.
Yes. So does Chick-fil-A hire you?
There we go. I'm gonna close the work session on House Bill 2446. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2455. Mr. Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2455 would extend privilege taxes on merchantable forest products harvested on forest lands, and that would be for calendar years 2016 and 2017.
Okay, thank you very much. Committee members, any discussion on this bill here before we take a vote? I know that Representative Esquivel loves that privilege. So,
and he loves the term privilege.
He loves the term privilege.
Isn't this the one that we've been doing a 2-year sunset on for this maybe the third time?
I think it might be. So,
and the money went to, I think, because I wasn't here when we did the hearing. I was ill. So,
okay.
I think this is the one that we've done several times.
Okay. Now this one has a referral, does it not?
Yeah,
to
Ways and Means.
Is it Ways and Means or Revenue?
Actually, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's got a subsequent referral to Revenue and
then Ways and Means,
and then a second subsequent, which we've contacted the Speaker's office regarding, and we've got a letter for a second subsequent to Ways and Means.
Okay, so we are arm's length removed twice here from this bill once it moves from this committee.
Never say we do something.
Anything further? All right, Vice Chair Krieger, again, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2455 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and if the bill referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
that the bill also be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krugler moves House Bill 2455 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the House Revenue Committee by prior reference and be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion on his motion? Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Escobel.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Aye.
Representative Woodsup.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McClain.
Yes.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and we have no need for a carrier because it's going on to another committee. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2455 and open a work session on House Bill 2453. And again, Mr. Gallagher, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2453 requires organizers of large commercial events to obtain a permit from the State Forestry Department prior to conducting large commercial events on state forest lands and authorizes the adoption of rules to protect health and safety. It also establishes penalties for violations.
Very good. And we had a lot of discussion around this bill, and some folks drafted up a -1 amendment. Is the department here? Will, I'd just like for you to, I know we had a lot of discussion on this bill, and if you could just tell us briefly what the amendment, -1 amendment does, it would be helpful, I think, for the process.
Good morning, Chair Witt, and
morning.
Members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Bell, Deputy State Forester for Oregon Department of Forestry, and with me is Justin Buturis, one of our policy analysts that has been responsible for drafting the amendments. And so, Justin, if you want to just quick.
Yeah, Rep. Witt, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. For the record, Justin Buttress, Department of Forestry. The proposed amendments that we have for House Bill 2453 is the first is that we may not issue a permit that authorizes a large commercial event to continue for more than 120 hours in any 90-day period. We added this so that it would reconcile with land use laws and administrative rules that the Department of Land Conservation and Development has. The other amendment we've added is a buffer zone between large commercial events and forest practices, as defined under ORS 527, added to the conditions under which we would consider rules for granting a permit. Reason we did that was to make it very clear that we would not be permitting people to interfere with forest practices, which is otherwise against the law anyway, but make it very clear that we're not going to put people inside of a timber sale where there's risk for public safety and other considerations. So those are the two amendments, the two changes, rather. In the
Thank you very much. Any questions about the -1 from the committee? Gentlemen, thank you very much. I appreciate you briefing us on this. I think it's very helpful for the committee members, certainly beneficial for me. Okay, with no further discussion, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Krieger.
Could you stand at ease just once?
Oh, hold on, folks. We're going to stand at ease here for a moment. Late breaking news. Committee members, I and your vice chairs have had discussions, and we have had suggestion that there may be another amendment possibly that's necessary for this bill, possibly. Once again, I want to remind the audience that we are being very tolerant here. And making sure that we get this legislation as good as we can. But in the future, please, everyone, do us a favor. And if you're concerned about an amendment or not, please, please, please do the legwork and make sure that that amendment's in before I'm sitting here with the gavel ready to pass a bill out. So I would just very much appreciate your help and consideration in the future. Colleagues, I am going to carry this bill over to a future date to be determined, and I am, for the time being, going to close the work session on House Bill 2453. That ends our business. Anything for the good of the order before we adjourn? I would just like all the fishing, or a lot of the fishing people have left already. I and a number of other committee members are members of the Sportsman's Caucus. We would like to take a look at or have recommendations from the various fishing groups as to bills that they either favor or oppose. And we would like your recommendations as the Sportsman's Caucus as soon as possible. And any one of us who's a member of that caucus would be willing to take those.
I think everyone here is a member of that caucus.
I think just about everyone is. So, great. With that, thank you, committee members. Thank you, public. We stand adjourned.